Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, this way is one. Okay. But let's make sure. Oh no, it doesn't work.
Okay.
You know what, why don't we just put it
in like that, and we'll figure it out for tomorrow or another day. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
So wonderful to see you all. So wonderful. So wonderful that people are willing to bring alive this ancient ritual, ancient ceremony. And it's not that easy. So that's just the whole point, is that we're willing to bring it alive and offer our bodies and mind to the ceremony. For a week, some of us. Otherwise, our tradition dies if we don't bring it alive. I mean, the Dharma doesn't die, but our particular brand of prayer and meditation isn't alive. Reading it in books is not the same. Shohaku Okumura always says, it's wonderful, and you really need a map when you're going to a strange land. But reading the map at home on your sofa is not the same as going to the place. So we're all going to the place. And lectures are also just a map. In fact, sometimes, I guess I'm getting more and more in the Uchiyama lineage, which is not even talking. Why talk? But I do think that lectures offer you a map or some guiding points for how to do this quite strange ritual. It's quite strange for human beings to sit still. I don't see it very often, especially to sit still for as long as we are. So why are we doing this? That's the question. Often on my first lecture of a 7-day session, I try to work with what are we doing and how. What are the instructions for doing this? So that's what I'm going to do again today, is try again to see if I can figure out what we're doing. Well, one thing we're doing is pausing. So what I notice in my life is that there's a very, very strong energy of momentum, of movement. I get up in the morning and I hook on the train and it takes off. And I'm like flying behind it, trying to, you know, keep up with the momentum, what I'm going to call the momentum of my karma. The momentum of my, what I'm supposed to do, what I'm supposed to produce, who am I responsible for, that kind of thing. Well, if you just stay on the train, your life flies by. You're filled, I'm going to say you, but one or human beings. If we don't learn how to pause and contemplate or make self-examination, We just are on the train of greed, anger, and ignorance until we die. Right? So pausing is a way of allowing self-examination and allowing an exploration of our ignorance. I'm using Buddhist terms, so that we can do life perhaps a little bit differently. When I was younger, I thought, oh, a lot differently. This is going to revolutionize my life and change me. Even my personality will change. Thank God. That's what I thought when I first started. Now that I'm at the end of my life and have been doing this a long time, I realize, that's not what happens. That was a fantasy of escaping my life. But Zen does not allow you to escape. I'm so sorry to say. It does invite you, however, to pause often and re-examine what you're doing and how you're doing it, and to slow down or be quiet enough that you might get a glimpse. He says that in Fukan Zazengi. This is just a glimpse of what is really going on, which is quite miraculous. I don't even see it when my mind is filled with the momentum of my stories. I'm just filled with, how am I going to fix these stories of mine so that I can be happier? And I don't even notice what's actually going on underneath the appearance of my stories. And all the stories are made up in our minds. We construct the stories. There is karma, you know, the past conditions produce the present moment. And lately I've been really thinking a lot about my ancestors also are producing. My Jewish ancestors are producing what I'm experiencing. And my Zen ancestors are producing what I'm experiencing together. Everybody together. So you can't escape that part. But what I can practice realize is I don't have to construct with my mind a whole big future or a whole big answer or a whole big strategy for eliminating my suffering. Even though Buddha said he was here to relieve us of suffering, right? That was one of his first things he said. And I totally believed him. But now I realize it's not the way I thought it was going to be. And I worked really hard the way I thought it was going to be to get what I thought was going to happen. But now I realize that was just an idea I had. And actually, we talked about it the other day. Zen practice actually makes you feel more the suffering of human life, not actually less. But in the welcoming, in the way you treat it, your life and karma, there's a slight attitude adjustment that can make you not suffer as much. Does that make any sense? And maybe some of us we'll get to a point where that attitude is so strong that we're not suffering in the same way. I find in my life that's occasional. I'm not strong enough for it to be all the time. But occasionally, I feel liberated from my the lion of my karma. Maybe you have a different animal. A sloth, some of you. If any of you know me, I'm really like a lioness. And sometimes I'm just so tired of her. Right now is one of those instances. I just feel like, calm down, honey. You're not going to get it that way. So let's get into the material. So you all have had Zazen instruction, I'm sure. Most of you. When I look around the room, I see, okay, everybody knows, right? Try to interrupt your thoughts, come back to your breath, be compassionate towards yourself and others. Try to be in the present moment, right? Are these all the instructions? They're very simple instructions, actually. So, try to be gentle with whatever instruction you have. Try to be gentle without being too soft. If you're too soft, you don't cook very much. Try to be unyielding without being hard. So what does unyielding mean? It means, okay, I'm going to make it through to the end of the session, and I'm not going to yield on that. But don't be hard about it. They call that hardness being practice-ridden or dharma-ridden. You know, like you got too much energy. You're trying too hard. So that's the art of Zen and the art of doing Sesshin, is not too loose and not too tight, as Pema Chodron always says. So one of the main instructions is to receive the moment as it is. A lot of the time, I don't want to receive the moment as it is. I don't want to receive if my knee is hurting me. I don't want to receive if I'm mad at someone in the Sangha. I don't want to receive if I'm crying about something from my past. You know, right? Our brain is very discriminating what it wants to receive and what it doesn't want to receive. But that's not the instructions. The instructions are to receive whatever arises. And that's the way how you don't suffer as much. If you fight it, that's a lot of additional suffering. If you feel it, sometimes something changes or moves or something happens. Joshu, we're going to be working with Joshu, so I'm skipping all around here, but there is one of his koans is about welcoming. A monk asked, when great difficulties come upon us, how can they be avoided? Right, so this is what I'm saying. We don't want certain suffering, we don't want illness, you know, the loss of a child. There's many things we don't want. So when that starts to arise in our life, how do we follow Buddha's instruction to, I'm here to stop suffering, all right? And Joshu said, Welcome. Bring it on. Let me have it. And then in terms of Zazen, if you're sitting in pain, sometimes physical or emotional pain, how do you welcome it? We're so used to bracing against it. Have you noticed? Like, so the question, and I'd like you to interrogate, what do you do with your mind? What do you do with your heart? What do you do with your body when you're trying to be with something you don't want to be with? That's a very wonderful teaching for life. I often call Zazen a laboratory for the rest of my life. And I think it's true. If I learn how to be with my pain when I'm sitting in the triangle of Zazen, I figure out how to be with pain. Then when it arises in my life, I have some practice. I have some knowledge of how this body and mind is able to receive life on life's terms. And life's terms includes old age, illness, and death. It includes a lot of loss, gain and loss. So inquire, what do I have to do to sit like a mountain when I'm welcoming something I actually don't want? No one can answer that for you. That's what you have to figure out from within. I've been putting up sayings on my wall. All phenomena wants, phenomena. That's each Dharma moment, that's each form, that's whatever is arising in the moment is a phenomena, or a Dharma with a lowercase d. All phenomena wants, all form wants, including our emotions, is to be allowed to arise and pass away in their own timing. To be allowed to arise and pass away in their own timing. Sometimes that gives me relief when I read that. And I say, okay, it hasn't been fully experienced yet. So it's not going to go away until it really feels honored, whatever it is. One of the reasons I love Joshu is he's very simple. He's so fresh and just this. Over and over, I can read the whole recorded sayings of Joshu, and I'm just shocked at how simple he is. And I'm so sorry to say that Byakuran isn't so simple. Because I have a very strong intellect, I really like to understand things. So I'm going to stop for a moment and try to work with understanding what we're doing kind of with a different kind of a map. Some of you have already worked with this. This is my Yogacara consciousness map. Could you pass that out? And this is what we're working on. And I try very hard on these charts and everything, and they never come out perfect. Like, it's too small. But I tried very hard. So you'll get this chart on the handout. Now, when I made this chart, this is a combination of, oh, am I going to remember the name of the sutra? Maybe not. This is kind of a chart I made up with two different sutras, putting them together. And I can't remember the name. So, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind. Does that sound familiar? Mm-hmm. Right. So those are our sense gates, and in Buddhism they put in mind as a sense gate. They think mind is like an organ, like the liver. And the product of the mind are thoughts. Mm-hmm. I find that very interesting. Could we deal, when we're on the zazen cushion, with our thoughts as just the object of the mind? The same way the bird sounds are the object of the ear. Right, do you get? Or are the movement of our breath is the object of our body, right? These are just objects. Even your thoughts are just an object of the sense gate. And thoughts, when they combine together, produce our emotions. So our emotions are part of this mind producing thoughts. So even the emotion for me, if I can think of it as just an object of my sense gate, I'm a little less distraught than I think it's totally me and real. And boy, I better fix this because I can't stand this. Not one second more. And then I go up in my head and I do all these strategies. Write letters to my dead mother, or do you get what I mean? I'm just like, call my son right away. Go back to the cabin and call my son. Do you get what I'm saying? Instead of just saying, this is just a feeling that's arising right now, and all it wants to do is be experienced. And when it's experienced, poof, it's not there anymore. Have you already, well, some of you who've done Sishin know this is true. One sitting, you're crying, and the next sitting, it's gone. And you're listening to the birds. Where did it go? It got released through experience. So, this is very fundamental. You have your organ, you have the object of the organ, and you have the consciousness. So the consciousness, I've been listening to the birds. So the ear hears the bird sound, and my consciousness says birds. Now, if you're a bird watcher, I know a few of them are, you don't even say bird here, you say northern oracle, you know, from somewhere, you know, you're very, very, very specific on your naming, right? But you still name it. And Buddhism says the name is not actually the thing. Right? It helps us talk to each other. It constructs, it's really part of human life that we name everything. But in Buddhism, they're very clear that if you get hung up just on names and talking, you don't actually experience or become one with that sound. Okay? I think I've talked about that. So, the word projection or the three poisonous minds, if I were to do this chart over again, I would put the three poisonous minds here. These are all here. And then manas, or our sense of a solid eye, this line, are the two big bugaboos. This is where we really have to break out of our ignorance. So what happens in word projection is we take our naming and then we do the second noble truth. do I like this bird sound or do I hate the bird sound? Mm-hmm. Do the bird sound make me happy or does it make me remember when I was in Honduras and with my ex-husband? I don't know. You get what I'm saying? We start to build stories up about the object. These stories can be very, very elaborate, can they not? They can be 7 Zazen period worth one story that we are manifesting, we are constructing in our own brain. I have found that what I construct, these fantasies of the future, they never turn out the way I say they are. Never. It's always a variation. And sometimes it's not, doesn't even happen at all. Right? You think someone's mad at you, for example. Then you go check it out and they said, what? I didn't even think twice about what you said. And then I think, oh God, I just spent 4 Zazen periods elaborating on something that wasn't real. Mm-hmm. Right? They didn't even notice that I went like that. You know? It's very interesting, this one. And what's interesting, what all the usual senscates, they call projecting on an object. The mind thoughts senscate, they call dream projection. Which is what I've been talking about. It's like a dream, our making up of all these stories. It's occurring in the present moment, right? But it's not actually what's actually happening. It is happening, but it's a distraction to, and I find usually when I'm making stories like that, it's usually I don't want to feel my feelings. I don't want to drop down. So often my Zazen looks like this. Oh my gosh. Is it already 10:15? Well, anyway. I'm sitting along fine. I think of something that hurts or is emotional. And I don't want to feel, so I go up into my head and try to fix it, or strategize about it, or what should I do next? And then I'm just up here like, and then when I notice I'm doing that, then I say, oh no, come on back down. So often my Zazen looks kind of like that. You know, and sometimes, maybe not the first day, but third day or the fourth day, sometimes I'm, a little longer, where I'm not allowing my mind to go crazy on what's actually happening. Now, so we're talking about this column, and now I want to talk about manas. So this is a big, this is a horizontal column, but it's very important to practice that it's, so the question in Buddhism is, who am I? That's the big bottom line question, right? Koan. Well, if I'm just up here in the usual ordinary mind, I make my I a solid, a unit, and independent from everything else. I just thought of Reb Roshi. Reb Anderson said, oh, we kind of get that the universe is interdependent, but we keep a little bubble up here that's I. We don't let I go into the energy of interdependence. We watch it. You know, we keep our I. So the object of the I is how we twist everything around us, ourselves. And the consciousness, I took this from the Diamond Sutra, I think so, that we have, this is the, what I think is ignorance to a T, when they say greed, anger, and ignorance. It's the ignorance that we're not interdependent. We think we're separated. And then what happens to humans? We get isolated. We get anxious. We feel unsupported. Any other words like that? What?
We don't belong.
We don't belong. What did you say?
We cause harm.
We cause harm to others because we're not feeling whole. So a lot of Zazen is to illuminate that you are totally whole the way you are, including your faults and imperfections. I can hear there was one woman in one of my 12-step meetings years and years ago. She obviously had a mental illness, but she came religiously and she was doing pretty well, actually, stabilizing herself. And she would always say, my name is Judith, and I love myself with all my faults and imperfections. Mm-hmm. She would say that over and over. I heard it. And I thought, Judith, you should say that. You should say that. Okay. So the erroneous perception is I'm a separate self. I'm a person that's born and dies. I'm a living being, and I have a lifespan. Do you see all of those make us a solid? When we think like that, everything becomes exaggerated and enormously important to our well-being. So practice realization breaks through that, and I have to say many, many times a day, so that I start to understand that I'm an interdependent energy, nothing more. Things come and things go, my feelings. What else? I just think when I connect with interdependence, then a lot shifts for me in my story, my storyline. And it helps release some of my suffering. Not all of my suffering, but wow, even 50% would be great, right? If it releases 50% of my suffering, I'm very a happy camper, you know. Katagiri Roshi used to say, this practice, liberation, takes lifetime after lifetime. It's not something you're going to totally get in one lifetime. Now, some people say you can, and I bow to them, and I hope that's true, but it's not what's happening to me. And that's all I got, is my own experience. All right. So we make up all our stories because we're attached to a self and a lifespan. So do you see how these two really start to build up our sense of that our stories are everything and we're separated? So Sishin really is about seeing if we can soften that view, seeing if we can see life more interdependently, and each moment, there's just an object that's arising. That's it. Experiencing the object and let it go. So now let's go over here. This is Prajna Paramita. I was glad we read it this morning. I'm going to swear. I swear when I want emphasis. What the hell do they mean? No eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. When we're experiencing them all the time. What does that mean?
So there's a lot of practice right on this line to move from all of this karmic story into seeing the world from a different perspective, seeing the world from different eyes. And this is Nansen, this is Joshu's teacher. So Nansen and Joshu, I'm using the Japanese names. That would be, in Chinese, it would be Nanshuan and Zhaozhou. Okay? If you know the Jap. But because my teacher was Japanese, I always heard it Nansen and Joshu. So I'm going to continue with my names. They had the most interesting and beautiful teacher-student relationship. And it's expressed in all of these koans. So it's it would be a cool session just to do any koan that both of them are in. Maybe next time we could focus on just the ones where they're both talking to each other. So Nansen said, for a moment. He didn't say forever. For a moment, do not submit to sight, sound, smell, taste, sensation, and thoughts. Naturally, you'll look like a moron or an imbecile. And there's a koan, maybe we'll get to it, about a baby's consciousness. Oh, and it was also in the sutra this morning. Baba Wawa, is anything said or not? So we're talking about a primordial non-thinking, before thought, which Buddhism calls the source, or emptiness, or silence, or pre-verbal experience of life. Right? It's all those emptiness, unbounded openness. Naturally, you're like a moron or an imbecile to be without knowledge of the hundreds of goings on is best.
Without
knowledge of the hundreds of going on is best. So you can't do this all the time, but you can do it in Sishin. This is what Sishin is made for. It's made for you. Okay, I have to say this very carefully. Zen practice is not about gain. So write that down if you're taking notes. Zen practice is not about gain. We should practice. You should sit on your zafu. You should cook the carrots. You should lead the community. Where is she? You should lead the community with no sense of gain or fame. You just do what's in the moment to do, and you let it go. Because that whole gain thing is about yourself as a I. If you're thinking of yourself as interdependent, there's no gain. There's no gain or loss. So how does no life, no death, no coming, no going, no gaining, no losing. There's a fourth one of the eight no's.
That's the winds.
That's the winds. But and do you get what? When you do negation, when you are not involved in the hundreds of goings on, when you're not clinging, attaching, you're just letting it float by like the clouds in the sky, you enter the negation place.
But you can't do it by gaining or trying or making it achievement. Joshu's very clear about this. He calls people Buddha-seeking fools. If you sit on your zafu and you're trying to get to here, you're way off. Why? Because the practices are not about trying for something that's going to happen in the future, right? The practice is receiving the object, the phenomenon of the moment, right now as it is. So if your leg is hurting, that's what you receive. Not, I hate that, I don't want to do, what I want to do is moo. Now, do you get what I'm saying? It's like, that's not what's actually happening, baby, you know? However, when I have pain in my leg, I can disassociate, is that the right word? Block it, is that the right word? These are all kind of negative words. Although we are in the column of negation, I'm not attaching to the objects. So pain in my knee is the object of, is a body object. Now, forever, seems like forever, but maybe two decades, I could let go of everything, except I couldn't let go of my body sensation. Mm-hmm. I just, that terrified me, and also I was intoxicated by my body movement energy. Until some Zen teacher, I was on pilgrimage, totally got in my face, said, really kind of meanly, is that all you want? You don't want to get, you don't want to see nothing? You know, you don't want to go deeper than that? You're just going to stay with form? You don't want to experience formlessness? She didn't actually hit me, but she was a Rinzai teacher. She was very in my face. And I cried for like 2 days. Because I had to let go of an old idea. And I had to let go of my body. And the way I did it was I just started to block. When they first put block in Fukan Zazengi, some of you are old enough to know the different translations of the Fukan Zazengi. The last translation made by the San Francisco, you know, the hierarchy, put the word block. Blocked in immobile sitting. Yeah, but that's the... Oh, blocked in resolute stability. And I hated the word blocked. I thought that's not the right word. But now I actually think it's the right word. In order for me to experience unbounded openness, not intellectually, not thinking, not through intoxication, which is usually body sensation, I have to let all of this go by like a cloud, not attach at all. So when my knee is hurting, I don't want to register it. Shohaku Okamura called it, when he was trying to describe non-thinking, how do you think of not thinking, non-thinking? That's in Fukan Zazengi. He said, your mind is on idle. There's a vibration in your mind. And Katagiri Roshi said he never could get rid of the vibration of I, or in the mind. But He wasn't grabbing on to things, right? It's just there. What did someone call it? Very beautiful. If I can find it. What was it? Quiet and alert mind. Oh, here it is. The five sense organs, including the mind, are inactive. But the mind is lucid and awake. Not this mind, the big mind. Right? There's two minds. This mind, which is discriminative thinking, and the big mind, which is the mind that's connected with everything. Okay. Yes.
So it's not like I want to like not feel the pain in my leg and not experience it, but I just experience it and then let it go.
Yes. You don't want to attach or avert.
Right. Yeah. You just... That word block is a tough one because it's like I see what you're saying. It's like, mm-hmm. am I blocking this sensation out or am I just allowing it to drop away?
Sounds like avert a little bit, the block. I mean, just the
aversion. Yeah,
right. Right. Like pushing it away a little.
Well, really, when I'm dealing with pain, I go towards it. Mm-hmm. I welcome it. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you do that? That's the question. How do you do it? But when I welcome it, I release it to be a cloud. When I don't welcome it, it's an object that's blocking me or really hurting me. But actually, it's not anything, is it? You stand up, after 30 seconds, it's gone. Yes.
I'm trying to understand too, in terms of like when you're talking about trauma, like an emotional trauma.
Okay.
And that word dissociation.
Right. Okay, so let's move there. Oop. In order for these two columns to get digested and released, you have to experience your karma. And interestingly, Zazen and this form of Sishin perfectly does it. Or doesn't it? If you have something to digest, it will bring it up. That's been my experience. This, what I call a triangle, some of us are sitting in a chair, but this triangle has been passed down for 2,500 years. If you sit in this way, everything you need to digest will arise. You'll be able to digest it, and then you'll be free. That's what they say. We don't like to digest past karma. But I have found the deepest way for me to digest the experiences of my past is to sit with them in Sishin without attaching to them or averting them. And you also, that's why you should be sitting in community that supports you in the schedule that you don't have to worry about what to do. You just do the next thing. The schedule is very supportive. It's supportive when you're going through some karmic release. It's also supportive when you're in a negated state because you don't have to think. When the bell rings, you stand up. When you see everyone's walking around, you walk around like an imbecile. Right? You know, oh, I have to go to the bathroom. Oh, you know, that's why they've set it up so tight. is because if you're in these states, you're completely supported by the choreography of the schedule. And the other thing is, you should work with the teacher. Oh, gave me chills. I unfortunately worked most of my Zazen life with a Japanese man. And they don't want to do that kind of work. So my triangle did all the work. My triangle, the Sangha, the schedule. But thankfully in the 21st century, it seems like, I think, at least at Clouds and Water, all of our teachers are very versed in how to help people hold what they need to go through and how to hold it in Sesshin. And I've worked with a lot of abuse survivors. I'm kind of known for it in a way. How do we hold it enough that we can get through the experiences we need to get through that we weren't able to feel when we were 8 or 16 or whenever you had a trauma? But now we're adults and we're in a schedule and we have the Sangha. And do you get what I'm saying? It's really a perfect place to work it through if you're willing to welcome it. And it's not dangerous now. Those people aren't here. You know, it's a, you're working through a fantasy that you're holding on to. Does that make sense? So that's all in this kind of column. Sometimes as it opens, you move in, very naturally, you move into quiet or silence. It's like, oh, there's nothing left. Oh, this is interesting. This is when I first moved into those stages, I thought, oh, this, I've never experienced this before. I've never experienced this safety. Even. Although I do have to say, karma keeps coming up, even when you're older. So the karma that I have from the abuse and from being Jewish and various things, I'm still dealing with it, and I'm 67 years old. But I have a lot of tools from Zen and from therapy and from this and from that. So I can treat it a little bit more just like an object. So before we stop this chart, and also I'll just say the storehouse consciousness, that's where all our karma is held. So it says projections without beginning. I love that. All as long as you live. The karma will be coming up, coming up, coming up, every moment, coming up, coming up. Maybe not if you're in this. They say if you're sitting with non-thinking in a silent, quiet way, you don't produce karma. It's the only time. But the karma is coming up, coming up, coming up, and you just deal with it over and over, over and over. As wholesomely, making wholesome decisions as you can. So Thich Nhat Hanh says, if the karma, if the seed that's coming up is a weed, you pull it. If it, the seed that's coming up is a nice flower, you fertilize it. And that's our practice forever. It doesn't go away, that practice. I love this. And in the Mu column, it says no seeds. They don't arise. Because you're not thinking, right? Now, I'd just like to spend a moment on the last column. If you're thinking of Zen in a gaining, achievement-oriented way, like I used to, you think when you get here, oh, great! I'm enlightened, right? But it says in one of the chants we're going to be chanting is, even knowing emptiness is not the end. It says something, I'm paraphrasing. So what is the end? And this is where Joshu is really fabulous. The end is returning to delusion. That's the end. And if you're interested, I've written quite a bit on this Daigo. This is from Dogen. You get realization, and then what happens is you realize it's no realization. It's nothing. And then you have to come back into your life integrated. How has knowing this and knowing no I, how does that change how you deal with all of these objects? Supposedly, it should help you deal with your life from a different perspective. And that's called wisdom. You deal with the same exact stuff, the same stories from your past, the same smells, sights, what a human being, that's what it means to be a human being, but you deal with it from a much larger perspective. You deal with it without attaching and averting, just experiencing your life. I wish I could do this as well as I can talk about it. It would really help me out. But you receive things in that way. You receive your life, even if your life is hard, and a lot of us have hard lives and are in hard situations. If we could just receive our life as Buddha itself, very naked, without all this juice we call mishigas, without all this craziness, he said, she said, you should, you know, all this stuff. Life gets integrated that each moment is karma and liberation. That's the practice, both of them. And the only place that happens is the present moment. There's nothing else. There's nowhere else to go. Everything besides the present moment is constructed from our brain. Memories, which are not accurate. You know, I just ask my brothers, you know, the same exact experience, and we all tell the story completely differently. So memories are made up in your head, and the future never turns out the way you think it is. Like I planned this lecture, and it's not going the way I thought. Do you get what I'm saying? So just stay in the present moment. That's Zen. Do you want? That's a simple instruction. The only thing that's real is the object, the delusion of the present moment. Oh, I had a quote from Katagiri Roshi, but I didn't write it down. But let me paraphrase it. Returning to delusion means that we have a large perspective now, beyond a sense of I, and we take care of the delusion with the most compassionate, wise way we can. That's what these wisdoms are. From this different perspective of life, not centralized around an I, interdependent with everything, the moment is the only reality. Nirvana and samsara exist together in the moment. That pivot in the moment, then we can start dealing with our life from wisdom rather than from ignorance. Okay. I kind of went through the chart. Do you mm-hmm. feel like you got the chart?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it doesn't mean you get stuck in negation. Is everyone clear about that? Mm-hmm. Actually, enlightenment means that you're able to take care of all this stuff from the perspective of wisdom. But you're very involved with your life. I mean, you can't help but be involved with your life. So, example, my son is my problem, but can I work myself through everything and get to the place where I can relate to him from my largest mind? That would be enlightenment for me. You know. Yes.
So, I'm not exactly sure the best way to do it, but it's come up twice. I, with the deepest respect, I know that you don't see me as they or him, but if you could not use the pronoun she, I would appreciate it. For all of you, if you could use they or them or he or him, I would really appreciate it.
When I was talking to you?
Yes, please.
Okay.
And you were referring to me. And I understand completely. Right. And I know it's different and all of that, but I just, it came up a couple of times and I thought I just needed to say something, please.
Oh, okay. So I'm sorry.
So it's okay. I didn't want to publicly embarrass you, but then at the same time I thought it would be then everybody can know.
Right, so. Right. I'm not embarrassed. It's just a habit that I need to change, and I want to change for you.
Thank you.
And I'll probably goof up.
It's okay.
Right.
I just, thank you.
Because it's so habituated.
Can I ask you a question? I am struggling with the idea of body pain and mind pain, welcoming and blocking. I can understand how blocking might get you to a point of negation. I'm not sure what happens after that to get to wisdom. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I actually think it could be the other way around. That you digest your suffering and get to the place where you're not attached to it anymore. And then through non-attachment, you see the wisdom. You get to be just a mirror or accept your life. So actually, I feel like you can't force negation. Negation comes after you've digested what you need to digest. Yes.
It might be interesting to look up what that character of blocking is. Mm. Because when I read it, what I think about is a woodblock. So it's more like a form, like the triangle.
Right.
The blocked means I'm going to stay here with it. Mm. That's the way I read it.
That's very nice.
Mm-hmm. Like a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering too if the blocking is more blocking the aversion and grasping rather than
the thing itself.
It is. And what it is the welcoming.
Is being who you actually are in this moment.
Try to help myself with the image of somebody or something has shown up at my door and I don't want to let it in. And then having that unlikable energy in my living room or something like that. So to that helps me turn my energy away from so much concentration on trying to keep the door shut, as opposed to doing my best to be welcoming is not always possible, but allowing, tolerating is maybe the best I can do, and that lets me stay a little closer to it a little longer.
Pema Chodron's, her instruction is stay.
Yes. The thing here, like, that I've learned at Clouds has helped me more than anything else is that when stuff, whatever it is, discomfort of some sort, is to really be loving towards that part, to really extend compassion, to really extend, because that has really helped, like, either get through it or dissolve it or something, and then it shifts almost always.
You know, there is another image that I think is important, because we don't always have, I think, the capacity to stay. Now, it's common that my idea about my capacity and my actual capacity are different. But still, the heat of whatever it is, the difficulty of whatever it is also not fake. It's arising. So, the idea of treating it like a fire and seeing if I can back off 8 feet or back off 20 feet, can I tolerate being in its presence is also a way of working with something that I'm thinking is overwhelming, I think I can't tolerate, but actually it's a kind of honoring of the fear, the grief, the power of that energy without leaving it. Sometimes that's a technique that's helpful.
I'll also just say that in Sishin, I usually get to a place where no techniques help me. I'm just completely,
yeah.
I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So and then I just wait for the bell.
Because it always works.
Yeah, and yeah. Because I trust the triangle. Whatever's happening is what's supposed to be happening. Yes?
I was thinking, what you were saying, something I've been doing is the story, if painful shit arises, I immediately start going, that's this, that's that. I didn't want to feel that. But to let go of that, I'm like, well, just let the pain be there. You know, if it's my father beating me or, you know, whatever. And don't add all this other stuff to it. To just, I don't know, just kind of, I don't know, be with it. I don't know.
Right. And it's a thought object. Because your father is not beating you right now.
It's a memory.
It's a memory.
Right.
So you can put it in this column of that is a thought object, like the bird sound is a hearing object.
So
when I do that, it lightens it up a tiny bit.
What about the feeling? When it's just, is that the karma of it? Of
usually feeling will go to body sensation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then it'll be what you're feeling in your body.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can say, oh, this is a body sensation that I don't like. Could I loosen up on like and dislike?
Yeah.
And just be with the body sensation?
Mm-hmm.
And then we can take Kyoku's example of I can't do that now.
Mm-hmm.
So then how far away do you have to go? And that goes back to your example that then I would switch to compassion. I would just start doing compassion practice for myself until maybe I could creep in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And also,
do this for one more breath.
Or can I do it for just an in breath?
Right. And also, very deep karma takes a long time to heal, don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah. And ancestral karma, I'm not even sure that can be healed in one lifetime. It's a generational thing. I'm learning from Jewish oppression that I tried my damnedest to not pass it on to my kids, but I did. And now they're having to deal. Maybe it's a little lighter. I hope it's a little lighter than what my parents experienced in World War II and what I experienced in the 50s. I hope it's a little lighter, but nevertheless, they're experiencing it. I wasn't able to liberate everybody. So that's karma that's maybe not going to go away.
So last night I was noticing I had like one thought, and then it like evoked all this, I think we've gone over this, but like all this like chest, stomach, like discomfort, and then I was kind of realizing that like certain topics do the same, but I just was like, I'm gonna stay with this, and I just went on and on and on. I was trying to like massage up my breath, it didn't. So I guess.
Well, that's an example of what we're talking about, right? It's a perfect example. And at some point, there's no technique anymore. You just say, you just surrender. Mm-hmm. You just say, oh. You say, oh, shit. I have to be with this. Or you can distract yourself.
You do. Yeah.
You can just say, okay, I'm turning on the TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. With compassion, right. Usually when I'm in a hard place, I just switch to compassion practice, whichever one works. Does phrases work? Does Tonglen work? Does just sending love to myself work? And I do that until I feel that the space has lightened up a little bit. And I don't worry about my breath or anything. I put my concentration on kindness. Okay, we're over time. So.